Testing 1, 2, 3. This is April 6, 1982, talking to Goodwin Semekin in Caltag. This is the first tape of today. Maybe we could just start out with last night. You had just looked at those records and we were talking about the tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe you could say a little bit about that again. What you used to hear people say about their chewing tobacco and how.
Yeah, well, long time ago, it used to be hard to get tobacco. Well, like I said, the traders only get so much stock in a year, you know. And then by end of the, maybe in April or May, then they run out of, not a lot of things to run out of. Tobacco and some sugar and flour and things like that. Main food to what the people would use. And so therefore they used to work for one another if somebody got a lot of tobacco, you know, they'd probably work hour or two a day just to get one little chew, you know. No, I don't think there's anybody that got too much of a stock, you know, but they kind of ration it, I guess, whatever they get, you know. Because I did that a lot of times, me too. You know, I started to chew since I was a little boy. A lot of times I had to work for my chew. A lot of times I had to get at least one chew anyway, you know. But it didn't hit me that hard, you know, I just wanted to work or help somebody.
So what kind of work would you do?
Like cutting wood or pack water or pack in wood, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the major thing that people has been doing anyhow, to getting wood, you know. For little kids, but for adults, you know, there was some other job. Like if some guys were a really good carpenter, then they'd hire him. If he make good sleigh, they'd hire him to make sleigh. Make good snowshoes, they hire him to make snowshoes, you know, things like that. And hauling wood, you know, so some guys haul a bigger load than one another, and then they just keep hiring that guy because that guy's bring pretty good sized load for $1.50 or $2, you know, whatever the load was. Now you got a haul wood for, now you got a haul wood for $12 a load.
That's a
sled load? A sled load, yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's not as big as a load that we used to haul for $2 or $3 a load a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Toboggan won't haul very much on snow machine. Mm-hmm. But if you got a basket sleigh, then you can fill it up plumb full, you know. I know a lot of guys used to hire me for hauling wood because I had that, my first snow machine, and I had a 12-foot toboggan. And I filled that thing all the way up till you couldn't hold no more on there. You know, and the wood would be, some of them would be over 12 foot long. But the snow machine was strong. You know, it was tough, that one I had. It goes slow, all right, but it can really pull a load.
How they built them, the first one,
was
to work, the snow machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did quite a bit of work with it there. But the one I had the most job out of was a three-horse Mercury, my first motor I bought. And I paid only $150 for it. I got it from Dominic Vernetti at Kaikuk. I did a lot of work with that little outboard motor. Seems like I did more work with the ones I got right now. I got the 70 horse and 20 horse Mercury. With that little 3 horse, I used to get wood, I used to get house logs, I used to push around my fish wheel with it.
How did you push your fish wheel with a small wheel like that?
Well, I couldn't do it in the springtime. When the current is strong, you know. But during the summer, I could push around the fish wheel with it pretty good. And house logs, you know, I get some house logs with it and bring my family around anywhere I wanted to go. You know. Only thing the boat I had was too small, so I built one. Me and my brother-in-law, Franklin, built a pretty nice long boat. It wasn't plywood either. It was a spruce, you know.
That small outboard could push that around too?
It was a 24-foot boat, and it still could push around that boat pretty easy. In fact, I used to go out moose hunting with it and take a guy with me or a couple of guys with me and enjoy my trip hunting around. And it seems like you could go up to anything that's on the beach, you know, because it doesn't make as much noise as the high-powered kicker. Mm-hmm. And then you really can see all the fresh tracks as you go along in the slough or in on the river, and you could see all the fresh track. You can tell it right away too. Well, I can tell right away whether it is a fresh track if I see a fresh track along the beach, you know. But not in those fast kickers, you know. Not in that 70 I'm using now. I hardly use that 70 horse for hunting. It seems like you don't enjoy your hunting, you just everything just fly right by, you know.
Is that what size kicker do most people use now in California?
Most people use the 20 horse right now. 20 horse about the right size for fishing.
Do they use bigger ones for a while or just stayed with 20 horse? Seems like some villages people all are trying to get those fast outboards.
Well, like for instance, if I was fishing around here, around near Caltech, you know, where I wouldn't have to haul fish very, very far, a 20 horse would be about the right size motor to haul around fish. You know, but for me, I had to haul, when the first commercial fishing started, I had to haul my fish from down 22 miles. And some guys were even below me that had to haul some fish. And it used to take us 3 hours to haul up some fish with a 20 horse. But I was using 220 horse. And the guys was using only 25 and 20 horse outboard motor. And it took them 3 or 4 hours to come up with about 300 or 400 fish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned last night that I wanted to talk a little bit more about your mother and father and things you remember about them.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we taped, you talked about the time you were running with your father on the with the dog team that time. But I was wondering if there are other stories. You said when you were real young,
mm-hmm.
and I think you fell off the sled and you were chasing him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was wondering if there are other stories that you remember.
Okay, when I first started to, I mean, when my sister got married with Clement Ismailcom, my oldest sister, then I stayed with them that fall, and then my dad wanted me to come back. He sent the word up, I stayed up Cayo with them, you know. So he sent the word that he needed somebody to hold a break for him, because he was carrying mail at that time. He was carrying mail between Nolado here and out to Old Woman, 10 Mile, not Old Woman, to 10 Mile. And the dogs were so rough, you know, he couldn't hold it, especially when he's got not very much mail to haul back. Usually there's a lot of mail come all the time down the river, but from the coast it wasn't very much. Sometimes you get about 40, 50 pounds of mail. And my dad used to handle about 13 or 12 dogs all the time, you know. So I went out with him out to 10 Mile, and coming back, my brother started ahead of us in the morning. And boy, those dogs start in, you could smell that fresh trail, you know, doing. You know there's dog team ahead. And them dogs start in barking and going. And most of the way I was standing on the brake, you know, holding the brake. That's what I went with my dad for, to hold the brake, you know. And it's not level, you know, it's up and down. Some places pretty deep. And out here at 10 mile, my dad told me to carry the skis, my son. And I stopped the dogs. You know.
He had been on the G-pole?
He was on the G-pole then, you know. They told me to carry the skis. So he got off the skis and then he got on a handlebar. And just when he was going down the hill, that the dog started barking. And I went down in the creek and then up. It was pretty steep bank, about 8 foot bank, I guess. He held the brake all the way up that bank and through the woods. And then by the time I got up on the bank, he was gone, you know. He was gone. I couldn't see him anymore. And I had about 30 or 40 stretch, you know, to see him. But he was gone. Gee, and all you see was just fresh snow has been, you know, where he was holding the brake. I stopped and listened. You know, I could hear my dad hollering quite a ways back in on the trail. Anyway, I never let go of this pair of skis. You know, I was still hanging on to it and running with it. And I was small then. I was scared, mostly. That could make me run, I think. I run about a mile and then come out in open flat. I couldn't see him in that open flat, you know. And the open flat was about a mile long. And I couldn't see my dad. And I was running, and then I see some places where he used a snubbing line, you know, catch some stump. But the stumps were too old, I guess. Well, the guy's cutting wood quite a while ago, you know, by the trail. And then he hooked them around there and pulled them out. I kept running and running. Pretty soon, I didn't even know I was tired or not, you know. I was so scared, I guess. I kept running. Pretty soon, I came down to there was a little creek. I know that little creek is 8 miles out from here. I was coming down in that creek, and there was my dad, you know. He was standing in front of the leader with his axe, trying to keep those dogs quiet. And I don't know how long he has been waiting there.
So how did he finally stop?
There was little willows in this. Usually the creeks are got little willows, you know, not enough to break anything. Otherwise the willows would give. What he did, he run, he slept right in those willows, you know, and it kind of slowed him down, and then it was going up in a little creek. And then that way the dog stopped. So he run out there with his axe, and then he stand out there try to keep those dogs quiet, you know.
What did he use his axe for?
Just try to scare the dogs, you know. You know, try to keep the dogs quiet from keep jerking. You know. So I caught up with him, and then he told me, get on the sleigh. So I put the skis on the sleigh, and then he told me, then I said, all right. Lead them dogs, took off, started barking and galloping. In a short while, we come out here. You know. And then my brother was ahead of us all the way, you know, from out at 10 miles. That's how these dogs, they got so wild. You know. But from here on up, it's mostly, from here to Nolade, you know, it's mostly all open place and no uphill. So he goes up there alone and then come back. And then only the place I was going with him was out on the cordage. You know. And then I was, yeah, and I was supposed to go to school. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're afraid you'd get left behind?
Yeah, well, I've never been out in the woods alone before. That's why I was scared. You know.
When's the first time you were ever in the woods alone?
All those, quite a few times after that, after my dad quit carrying mail, I used to go trapping with him. He was a fast walker. My dad was a really fast walker. I mean, he never run, but he can really walk. Most of the time, I had to run to keep up with him. I must have been about 10 or 12 years old at that time. And I had to keep up with him running, you know. I had to run behind him. But, you know, when you're a kid, you got a lot of energy, and you never feel it if you get tired or not, or if you take a 2 or 3 minutes rest, then you're ready to go again. So that's the way I was, and then a lot of times he used to get away from me, but I used to catch him up running, and then that way I got a little bit braver being staying in the woods way behind him, you know. So that way I got used to be alone. Pretty soon then I started to go trapping alone. And then the longer I trap, the better I like it. You know, if I go long ways in the woods, and then sometimes don't even notice that the darkness is already coming in on me. So I turn back, and by the time I get back to the camp, it's pretty dark in November, you know. In November, the days are short. So I must get home around 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And I walked maybe 4 or 5 hours in the dark. It doesn't bother me, even though if I go walk in the dark. And
did you start out in the dark in the morning?
I usually start out pretty dark in the morning. You know, sometimes I wait for the daylight, and then sometimes I just go whenever I want.
What kind of light did you use? Like if you're changing traps when it's dark.
Well, I used to have a flashlight, but, you know, the flashlight batteries was very valuable in those days. So you only use it when you go check your traps, you know, and then put it away again, you know, to save the batteries. Like, for instance, if you were out in the woods for 2 or 3 months, you know, 2 or 3 months out at the camp. But after I got married, I never stayed out that long because I had to come in and out, and you know, so my family don't run out of wood or food. So the longest would be out maybe a couple of weeks, and then back into town again. Stay in town for another week, and all that 1 week you've been hauling wood and getting water and get ready to go out again.
So you weren't afraid to stay out then because you were staying out with your father at first when you were young?
No. I never stayed out alone for till I was about 19 or 18 years old, and then I could camp out alone.
Well, what was it that you liked about being out when you'd walk on the trail by yourself?
Well, it's just a walking that I used to enjoy, you know, enjoy the scenery. Mostly, if you walk, and then you take in everything, you know, you enjoy the scenery, you know, when you're walking. A lot of times, you know, if the weather like the stormy weather, you could easily get lost too. You know, so most of the time, if there's a good weather, I always kind of spot some trees or some lakes or some hills to go by. And usually if you're out in the woods where it's not open, you always get lost in the woods. I know I do all the time. Therefore, you know, if I'm out in the woods and I don't know where I'm at, it seems like I'm getting lost. I kind of spot from one tree to another, and I'll see if I make a circle or something. But still like that, I always get lost in the woods. But my father used to tell me, the best thing to do if you're getting lost, you find out, go turn around and follow your tracks. Well, I never did that. I always think I could make it, you know. And it seems like I get worse every time I try to go think I'm going to make it. You know?
What would happen when you get lost? Would you go in a circle, or you usually go one way?
You go in a circle, and then pretty soon you cross your track again, and then you don't know where you're at. You know? I'll tell you one story. When I was going to Unalakleet from here, I know every mile from here to Unalakleet, and that's 90 miles. And I left here 5 o'clock in Friday evening. It was in March. Guys had left from here to Unalakleet. Some of them had left 9 o'clock in the morning. And some guys left in the afternoon. Some guys were kind of waiting for me. You know, there was, Austin Ismailka was kind of waiting for me. And so he left around 2 o'clock, and then 4:30 I get off. 5 o'clock I left here. I was going to Unalakleet for some groceries. And I had a 14 horse Polaris snow machine. I told him, I'll catch you up on the way. So I left, and I was driving along pretty fast. Pretty soon I caught Austin and his father-in-law. They were out about 22 miles from here. No, past 22 miles.
And they had dogs? How are they traveling? A snow machine?
It was a snow machine too. But my brother had left, my brother Michael had left 9 o'clock that morning, him and Walter Andre. They left 5 o'clock that morning. And so I told him, I know every mile I just trail out to Unalakleet. But I've followed their trail all the way, you know. And I finally kind of lost where I was. I didn't even know where I was. But I know they were still going straight. You know. Pretty soon I got out to 10 mile, and I seen a light way down in the open place. You know. It was open, flat. I seen a light way down there, so I just went straight to them. And I asked them what they were doing. They said they were lost. They didn't know where the trail is. Well, I know exactly where the trail was, me, you know. So I told him, I'll go ahead of you. There's new trail up here, Pete's camp. And there's the old trail is out here, just where those cottonwood are. You know, but let's go up to Pete's camp, and we'll go by there. And if there's no trail there, we'll stop overnight there. So I went up there ahead of them. Sure enough, there was trail there, you know. So we didn't even stop. We just kept right on going. I was going ahead of them from there, I know all the way. And so I went out to Old Woman. And from Old Woman, I don't think we'll follow the trail. I told them it's mostly all open country, you know. I don't think we'll follow the trail from there. So one of my buddies was with me, was standing behind me on the sled, you know. We were riding along. Pretty soon, you seen a light way out there at White Alice, this 14 miles this side of Unalakleet. You could see that light off and on, but the weather is closing in, you know. It's snow and blowing, and once in a while you couldn't see it. So I thought I was going straight all the time, you know. And pretty soon, I went down towards the creek, and I don't know how I turned around. I don't know how I made a big circle. And I was driving along, and I never looked back for those other guys. There was three other snow machines that was behind me. And I never looked back. First thing I seen fresh trail right in front of me. I stopped there. I turned around to my friend back there. Oh boy, trail to Unalakleet now, I tell him. And then he said, that's our trail. Our trail, I tell him, I ask him. He said, then he walked up to me, you know, I said, you made a big circle and didn't come back. I was wondering what you was doing. He said, you know. And these other guys caught me up, and then Austin said, what you make big circle for? I told him, I didn't know it. I told him, I thought I was going straight, you know. So I told him to go ahead of me. So I said, okay. I told him, well, I kind of recognized the place where we were then. I told him, go right straight up there, and then you'll hit the those tripods up there, somewhere up there. And if you find one, just follow it. I told him, and of course it was all open country. And they had every mile they had a tripod at that time, you know, to stake the trail, or even the telephone line. I told him, then you could follow that one. So I started to drive behind them. Pretty soon they stopped, and then I caught them up and I asked them, what do you want to do? We want to drink tea, they said. I said, okay. We look at the time, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, I might as well camp, so we'll get an early start. I said, you know, let's go up there in that valley and make camp up there. It was pretty dark and couldn't see the light again at White Alice, you know. So we stopped and then we made camp and then went to bed. And it was getting daylight at 8 o'clock. So my brother-in-law got up and made fire and I got up and looked around. As soon as I looked down towards the Unalakleet River, I know where we were, exactly where we were. I said, we're 23 miles away from Unalakleet. And the whaleback is right down in here. You go down a little ways and then you just follow the stake out. But they said, okay. After we'd breakfast, you know, we all left. I would keep behind them. But they were driving faster than me, all of them. You know, I wasn't driving too fast. I kept driving. Pretty soon, I see them way out there, they call the Shiroska River. You know, there's another creek going into Unalakleet River. I see them way out there. I don't even know where to go then again, you know. So I just took my time and went down there. Pretty soon they said, where's the trail? I stopped and then I looked and, gee, I think it's down this way. But I guess right that time, you know, I didn't know where the trail was exactly. I think it's down this way. Let's go down this way. And so we went down the river, you know. It was all open country. So we kept on going. Pretty soon I recognized the place, the trail where the trail crossed the Shiroska River. So we got in there and then I lead them again and then they started to go ahead of me. Then went on the other side, there was open place all the way again from to Unalakleet. So they all left again. I mean, I was driving behind them. Pretty soon, they opened up their motors, I guess. Pretty soon I started to catch them up one by one, you know. Some guys say the motor is too hot, they're driving too hard, you know. But they're going with the wind, you know, and then every time you go with the wind with the snow machine, it really gets hot. And so I kept up with them and then finally got the Unalakleet. Now, things like that would happen, you know, you'd get lost, you know, if you were. Out in the woods is worse. I got lost a couple of times too in the woods across this trapping.
What do you do when you get lost?
I just keep on walking until I recognize the place. I was pretty good on a country too. You know, like around 22 miles, I don't think I'll ever get lost around there. I think I know every puddle there is around 22 miles. Camp down here. Well, I was raised there, you know, and I should know the country real well in there. And mostly I found that out by foot, you know, walking. And probably the same way across here too in this open country, you know. When I used to go out trapping, I never used to go back on my trail. If I go out one trap line and then I'd never come back on my trail. I always try to find different way to come back and see the country. Just in case I get lost, you know, and then I know where I'm at all the time. Yeah.
The times you got lost in the woods, was that a storm or was it bad weather?
Was a storm in December. me and Simon Stanley was trapping up here at about 15 miles inland across here. And we were trapping together, and then we went together on trap lines, you know. And then I asked him if we could make shortcut, you know, it was getting close to Christmas time. I asked him to make shortcut. And we come out in the lake, and gee, I never seen that lake before. An open place, you know. I asked him where we were, and he said, well, he don't know too. So we crossed that lake, and then it was going according to the wind, you know. We crossed that lake and then went in the woods on the other side. But soon we come back in that lake again. I don't know how we turn around. And so I told him, gee, we're lost. We don't know where we're going. I don't know where we're going now. But according to the wind, I told him, let's go kind of face that wind. Then maybe one of us should recognize our trap line. So we started out again the same way, you know. Walk back in the woods, and every once in a while we stop and we look at the trees, see which way the wind is blowing. So according to that, we walk and we keep on walking. Pretty soon we hit our trap line, you know, and then we know where we're at. And if it's really stormy and then you see the north wind, or usually the north wind comes from in winter time, you know. And summertime there's south wind. And as long as you could see a star or the moon or the sun, you know, you know exactly where you're at. You about know where you're at if you're lost.
Are those things that your father taught you from being out in the trap line? He taught you to look at the sun or look at the stars?
No, but I have heard from different people. You know, wherever you go, you always kind of spot the way. And even looking at the ground, you know, just, or the trees, or which way the wind has been blown, or like, in, usually the fall time is, it rain like this too, and then the trees get iced up, you know, and usually ice up from the north. So, you say, what's all those things if you get lost? You'll survive all right if you just know what you're doing, you know, and never get excited.
I think those young people now in learning how to look at things, or
I don't think that's one reason why I'd like to have some kind of a men's club meeting. Like the women's have a women's club here. Maybe some of these young guys will participate in the meeting. I know a lot of them would get lost in the woods. They would know what to do. You know, they would know how to survive. Because they never hear anybody talk to them about how to survive if you get lost, you know, like older people. And, you know, if like some other things, like if you're lost in the woods, or as long as you have axe and matches, you could survive pretty easy. But like if you were, for young guys, if you get lost in the woods, you never stop and think about those things. You just keep on going till you're just tired, you know. Because I know it happened like that here a couple of years ago. It was Raymond Nicolai Jr., you know, he went across and went out hunting and he got lost. And as soon as they found out that he was lost, well, it's one good thing about the people here, they always, you know, if somebody is lost, and they all just gather up and start in hunting, start in searching for a guy. And for a weather like this, you can easily get lost, and then you can't track up a guy too, you know, if it's snowing or blowing, Well, I wasn't here at that time when Raymond Jr. got lost. But she said for a whole day, those guys were out there, a whole night and whole day. They looked around for him, and they couldn't find him. They finally found him across here, and not too far away from here. You know, the kid was already passed out, but lucky it was warm, you know.
He
was so tired. He would just keep on walking and walking and walking, you know, never even think about making fire or anything, till he just dropped. And you know, things like that, the kids never hear from other people. You know, that's where I learned most of my experience, from different people, you know. I might use one of these days, you know, if I get lost, I might do something like that, you know, just from hearing other people. I might use the something that they explain to me.
When would you hear stories? When would people talk about things when you were younger?
Well, there were some old guys like my Uncle Reuben and my Uncle Alex Solomon Sr. He used to sit down and talk about long time ago, you know. And like us, we used to sit down and listen to him. Like me and Plasker or Franklin or Plasker. We'll get interested in a guy that's telling us about things that we've never seen. Things that maybe we have heard about. And then we hear it again. It was interesting listening to those guys. I remember one time when I was out hunting with three old guys, like my uncle Alex Solomon, who were out bear hunting. It was in August. That was the first year I got married, you know. They asked me if I want to go out hunting with them. Me and Simon in Missouri went out. There was six of us. We went out 22 miles down here and went out on a hill. And this one old man had an inboard motor. He had a 5-horse inboard motor. So we used the boat and go down in it. And then from there went up on a hill. Went out on the hill. And it was nice weather. So we went up on the first hill, then we spotted a bear. So these old guys told us, you and Simon go after that bear. It was the youngest one, you know. So we went after the bear. It was quite a distance off from where we were. And it was already getting dark. So I told Simon, hurry up, let's go. So all we took was just our gun and our hunting knife, and we started in walking. I was a better walker than him. I could walk fast and I could run fast too. But most of the time I run and then I walk and I run and I walk, try to get to that bear, you know. But finally we got to it. And then he was about ready to go back, to go call the day, I guess, this bear, you know, after he had all day eating berries. And then we sneak out to it, and he was quite a distant off. So I told Simon, you shoot at it first. And it was in the open door. We couldn't go any closer to it, you know. So I told him, you shoot at it first. So he shot at it. And I could see where he shot. He shot about a foot above that bear, you know. I could see where he hit, because the moss fried up. And he kind of ducked, you know, the bear kind of ducked-like. And he didn't know where the shot come from. I mean, you know, he heard that where the bullet hit and the firing from some other place, so he kind of ducked and stood there and looked, you know. And then I up and shot, and he jumped up, and I shot underneath, and he started in running. And usually a bear go down the hill when you run away from you. We keep shooting at it, so I just took my good old time, you know, and then I shot, and pursuit just rolled over. I hit him right on the head, and it's keeled right over, you know. That was it. mostly I call it an accident shot, you know. But I really took my time, I really wanted to get it, you know. So when we got to it, it was dead, you know. So we just butcher it right away and put the meat down on the willows, and then we left. Going back to the camp, we didn't take nothing in. Well, we had nothing to carry it in. It was getting dark, it was pretty dark already. So we started to go back to this old man's camp, you know. He said they want to make camp. We started to walk and then keep on walking, walk. Well, I didn't spot the place where we were walking to this bear because it was so much in hurry, you know. And then we keep on walking. Pretty soon it looks like we were kind of going in the wrong direction. You know, it was dark. So I told Simon, looks like we're going in the wrong direction. We're going around a hill, I told him. You know, so we stop and we listen. We never fired a shot, though, even though I know we didn't know where we were, you know. So we started to walk a little ways again. Pretty soon we seen a light way up on the hill. You know. His dad found out that we were lost, you know. So he got up on the highest place and then he strike a match and then burn some birch bark. And then we saw that light, you know, then we hollered at him. And then he guided us back to the camp. Well, he wasn't too far away, maybe it was about a quarter of a mile from the main camp where we had camp. But next morning we got up and we told him that we got the bear, you know. Well, every time you catch something like that, the old people are always happy. And of course, you know, they're going to get something fresh to eat. You know? So, but we didn't bring nothing, we tell them, you know, because we didn't have nothing to pack it in. So we just left the meat there. Next morning we got up and then they told us to go back and get the meat. Go back and get the meat and bring it here. So we'll make cash here and we'll leave it here. So Missouri went with us and Robert Stanley went with us. So I went over and carried the whole bear over to the camp and then these old people, they ate, you know. And then he said, we won't go out further, out to the next hill. You know. So we said, okay. So, well, I don't want to turn back yet. Once I go out hunting, I don't want to turn back. Like if I go out for one day, I don't want to come back. I want to keep on going till it gets dark. So with Nick, went down in the valley and went up on the hill quite about 5 miles out, I guess. While I was walking ahead of them and it looks like I was walking too fast for them. You know, well, the old people couldn't keep up with us, but they see our trail, you know, so they keep behind us. But Missouri and Simon, they were pretty close to me, you know, so I started to walk faster because I know on top is a nice open place, you know, I spotted it from this other hill. I wanted to come out in that open place right away. So I started to walk a little bit faster and faster. Pretty soon I come out in the open. And just when I was coming out in the trees, there was a bear out here. Well, he never looked at me, he never seen me, you know, or never heard me. He was too busy eating berries. So I stopped. And then I heard those guys walk and I went like that to the mirror. And they slowed down.
So you just stretch your hands out and tell them to stop.
Yeah, tell them to stop, you know, they slow down. And then they sneak up to me and say, what? Then there's a bear out here, right out here in the open. He's eating berries. So all three of us, Missouri and Simon, got in line, you know. I said, I'm not going to shoot. I wait. You guys shoot, I told them, you know, so they shot and then they shot the bear. Now sit down there and we started talking. Pretty soon the three old men came, you know, and then they stopped there and then they skinned it. And then we hang it up again. You know, just they want to go out further. I mean, out on this big hill out there. That's where they wanted to go. You know, they used to go out there only when they were young, they say, and used to walk out there and they all want to go out there, all three of them, you know. just see the scenery again. So we hang the meat up, and then we went up on that hill. And then one of the old men said, this is the place where we used to have camp, and there's water close by here. We can get some water. We don't have to go down to the creek and get some water. So we made camp right there. And from there, we started to go up on hill, up higher, you know. We got up on that hill, and then we stayed there all the day. We come back. The next day, we went back up from our camp. We went up there again. Gee, there was a lot of bear that time. And then, we're sitting on top of the hill there, and pretty soon there was two bears right at the foot of this hill, where there was a big cliff there on the other side of this hill, you know. There was two bears coming up the creek in the open place. I mean, we've seen them. So these three old guys said, well, we're going to go to those bears. But three, like Simon, Missouri, and me, we didn't say anything, you know. We just, okay, we'll sit up here and watch you guys. There was old man Stanley, Missouri stat, and Simon stat, you know. And so we stood up on the hill, and then they started to go down that cliff, you know, and then they went down on the other side and crossed that little creek. And on the other side of this little creek, that's where the bear was. You know, they were eating berries, but they were two brothers, two big ones, you know. We sat down and watched.